have a notebook.
All right.
But I don't think there's anything in it that is outside of what we would normally talk. The match is shorter than I remembered.
Yeah, it's not. It's, like 15 minutes or so, maybe 14 minutes.
Yeah.
I didn't have a stopwatch or anything because I'm not a nerd, but.
Right. Well,
Right. Well, I mean, yes, I am a nerd, but I'm not that kind of nerd. I'm not a stopwatch nerd. I am Jason Mann, returning from a long hiatus. My guest today is the wonderful Joe Drilling. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to having a show, Jason.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. And I knew that we had planned this before the hiatus, and it was one of my motivating factors to get back into the podcast game was to do this match. The match is
Wow.
from March 30th, 1991. It is the Road Warriors taking on the formidable team of Hulk Hogan and Jinichiro Tenryu. And you touted this match as being something that you were interested in discussing. This was kind of back in when I was going to do a bigger Hogan project that didn't really ever get off the ground, but tell me why this match stands out to you.
I was actually going to ask you if this was still part of the Hogan's 60th birthday extravaganza, but no, not so much.
His birthday has come and passed.
It's true, but
So
he's still 60,
he is
so.
still 60. Yeah, I guess I could, we'll see. Maybe it'll be part of something bigger. Maybe we'll do a series in the Hulkster. But for now, this is our focus.
All right. Well, I he. So Hogan's work in Japan is sort of a weird thing for me. Hogan in general is a weird thing for me. I don't know that I've ever really discussed candidly and directly my feelings on Hulk Hogan. Like I say a lot of things on What a Maneuver, and I've said a lot of things here because we've watched a few Hogan matches that you and I have talked about. And I don't like a lot of things about Hulk Hogan. I think that he's too protective of his quote unquote spot. I think that he's greedy. I think that his when he has creative control over his own character. Well, I think you can't let the inmates run the asylum. So I think really no performer should have control over their own character. But he actually gets it in a lot of cases, whereas you don't really ever come across that with Balls Mahoney, because he doesn't get that kind of sway over his contract, over his the content of his character, in the performance.
Yeah, and Balls, while he may have far less money than Hulk Hogan, has perhaps more esteem within a certain segment of wrestling fandom.
Right, that's true. Now we just but we don't know, like. What if Balls Mahoney was given creative control
Yeah.
over his, maybe he would be just as drunken with power as Hogan
It
if
certainly it drunken with something,
yeah, well, he's always drunken. He's already drunken with something.
Right, yeah.
Man, it's almost December. Remember Santa Claus?
I like it was yesterday.
Like I wake up in a cold sweat and having nightmares about it all the time. Oh, no, I no. So I but Hogan, and I think that his work is really hit or miss as far as the United States goes. Like, yeah, just holy shit, his work is really hit or miss. Like there's and when his work is good, it's usually not because he's a great technical wrestler, but because he really gets a feel for the crowd and how to manipulate them. And I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah, and there are not many people who are better than that than Hogan in their careers, at that aspect of it, certainly.
Right. And so, he's really he's a weird, he falls into a weird place for me, and it's
Yeah.
hard for me to talk about him sort of in general.
Yeah. Well, I remember, becoming a educated slash obsessed fan in the late 1990s. Like, I had my, early wave of kid fandom late 80s into the early 90s, and then I had my dormant period, and then I had, my beginning of my like adult wrestling fandom, where I began to like research, like, the kind of like the real story behind everything, and try to like understand how wrestling actually worked, and try to understand, like, oh, there's like this critical online community that like analyzes this, and trying to figure all that out. And I remember during that time, there was this whole like legend of like Hogan in Japan. Like, there's this mystique behind it. And like, there was video, obviously, of Hogan's matches in Japan, but it wasn't like it was now with YouTube, where you can go and you could watch dozens of Hogan matches in a day and get a, or in a couple of days, and get a sense of like what Hogan's career was like in Japan. But back then, you could, but you'd have to buy a video or buy several videos, and it took time and money and effort, and so it was harder to get like a good sense of it. But there was this thing where, like, in 1997, 98, like Hulk Hogan, oh, he sucks, but there's this great Hulk Hogan that existed like in Japan, and it's like this kind of mysterious thing. Like, Japan is sometimes there's a sense, like, in wrestling lore, this is more like in the bounds of storyline, where there's like this, the way that WCW and WWF in the past treated Japan is like this, there's this mystical Japan where this serious wrestling takes place, and there's these kind of wacky characters, and we kind of present it, but not really in context, and in sort of a scattered, confused little way. But this was actually a Tokyo Dome show, 6 days after WrestleMania 7. So Hulk Hogan is now a three-time WWF champ, having passed Bruno Sammartino's record. A joint show between WWF and SWS, which is sort of a short-lived promotion
It's
rivaling.
Tenryu's promotion, if I'm not
Right.
mistaken.
Yeah, rivaling, New Japan and All Japan, Tenryu being a big star for All Japan in the 80s.
Yes, the super world of sports,
Yes. Hey,
as it was known.
Super World of Sport, that's a good one, They had a good slogan. What was their oh, the
Straight and strong,
Straight and
and
Strong.
Godzilla was their mascot, apparently.
Yeah, that's nice.
So,
So this is, but this is sort of like the period, because you talk about like the inconsistencies of Hogan's career, and there's definitely like the hits and the misses. But I feel like when Hogan was on, he was really good, and he was on a lot more, like the effort and the focus was there much more early in his career. By this time, the effort was less often there, and it's understandable. Understandable because, he's 15 years into his career. He's obviously has a lot of bumps and bruises and stuff. He's nearing 40. People, were kind of thinking like, hey, maybe this is close to the end of his career, because, even most wrestlers, I mean, sometimes they go into like, 50 or so, but I'm obviously, people were shocked that Hogan's career lasted another, decade and a half from this point. So,
Right, yeah,
but
okay.
it's sort of understandable that, like, as a guy gets more comfortable and a guy gets more, like, he's gonna kind of do what's easiest, because even even an easy match is still, physically taxing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I
Yeah.
mean, and I can say that
Sure.
from experience. You
Absolutely.
know,
Right.
even easy matches, sometimes the easiest ones. I feel like, I don't know if I've mentioned this on your show or not before, but battle royals seem really easy, and they're just a recipe for injury. Like,
Yeah.
they're the worst.
So many bodies in the way and so
Yeah,
many, yeah.
right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's just interesting to look at that. And I would say, you know, of the Hogan in Japan that I've seen, even of this era, like it's pretty good. I mean, he definitely incorporates more technical wrestling, and he works generally works a little stiffer. You know, I don't know if this is necessarily the best example. I mean, he works a little bit different, but this isn't really that far different from what I feel like he was doing in WWF in 1991.
Yeah, so I just kind of do want to go kind of address what you're saying here about the mythical Japanese Hogan and all that stuff. And there's a pretty decent, High Spots has a pretty decent, I want to say it's like 3 to 5 discs of Hogan in Japan. That's, as I understand it, has some pretty decent stuff on it. And yeah, three DVDs, 3 discs. You know, that's, I mean, from 80 all the way through 93, and actually has another match with against. Oh, that was not, that was when Hawk was teaming with somebody else because Animal was hurt. But it's him and Hogan and Muta versus Hawk and Power Warrior, who's a Jap. I'm trying to remember who that was.
That's a Kintsugi Sasaki, I
It's
think.
Sasaki,
Yeah, I actually watched that match as well.
So, but. So this match, though, you're right. I mean, the most impressive thing he does is a drop toe hold, which coming from Hogan is pretty damn impressive. you know, but by the same token, I think that's overstated a lot. Like, he's better in Japan, but he's still not, like, it's not like you watch his Japanese stuff and you confuse him for Dean Malenko or anything. You know, and I feel like in a lot of ways, especially like what you're saying, when you were, you know, if you're a wrestling fan in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was sort of the way it was presented by a lot of people on message boards, is like, yeah, man, you think Hogan sucks, but like, you watch his stuff in Japan, and it's basically like watching, you know, Eddie Guerrero or Tiger Mask or something, and that is not the case at all. Like, he's just different and a lot better in a lot of ways, but he also cuts down on a lot of the stuff that makes Hogan Hogan. You know, and in this match, for example, you don't get any of the ear cupping, you don't get any of the, I mean, you get the boot and the leg drop, but there's no build up to it. You don't get the, he doesn't Hulk up, he doesn't point, he doesn't, like, all that stuff that you associate with Hogan, he doesn't do a lot of that stuff. So you lose a lot of that stuff, which is what makes, you know, American Hogan, babyface American Hogan at least, you know, really good.
Yeah.
So you lose you know, that. And again, as you say, there's not a ton of even of his, especially Japanese-y stuff, because he's still, I mean, he's in there with Tenryu, who's his partner, but he's wrestling the Road Warriors, who are also Americans, and it's a WWF show. So, you know, you still get that kind of stuff. So yeah, this was, I guess this was a big card. This is 12 matches, and it was a week after WrestleMania 7. And I didn't watch the, I'm sure I could have found it online somewhere, but I didn't watch the whole show. Did you watch anything else on the show, or?
I did not watch the rest of the show, no. Yeah, there's a Hart Foundation
Rockers.
and Rockers match. Oh, and there's that Earthquake Koji Kitao match. That's like the where they, well, I'm not sure if that's the one, but
Yeah,
there's
it's this one.
it
It's this
is
one.
that one. Okay, that's the one where they actually get into a real shoot. Because they both had like a sumo background, and Katao, I think, was a guy who was like known as just like a huge, like difficult guy to work with. And then mostly interpromotional matches. Other than that, there's a Ultimate Warrior Sergeant Slaughter match, Kerry Von Erich and Mr. Perfect, Randy Savage and George Takano. Was he the Cobra? I think he
Believe
might have.
so.
Yeah, he was the Cobra. Yeah, so I think he was kind of a high flyer around the same time, you know, in the early 80s, the same time Savage and he were both kind of being touted among the top high flyers in wrestling, you know, because Cobra did some WWF shows before Savage had his run, but I know, you know, I've seen some junior heavyweight stuff with him and Tiger Mask, and you know, there's I think there were a handful of other guys who did a handful of shows during that time. So that might be an
Yeah.
interesting one.
I totally forgot that as the Cobra, they billed him from Uganda.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
He looks Ugandan.
Well, you know.
Oh, you know what? Actually, before we get into the match itself proper, I should say, everybody should pour one out for Maurice Mad Dog Vachon, who
Oh,
died
yeah.
early this morning.
Yeah.
He was in his 80s, but he's he yeah. I guess I don't, depending if there's younger wrestling fans listening to this, they might not even know who that is, I guess, but he was a Midwestern, he was an AWA guy,
Well, yeah, well, in Montreal and
where he's
across
from Montreal.
Canada. Well, yeah, I mean, he did a lot in Montreal, which was a huge wrestling city. Yeah, all the AWA cities for a long time. And yeah, I think mostly Midwest across Canada. But he did a little bit with WWF during the Rock and Wrestling
Yeah, a little
stuff,
bit.
just a little bit, but
He was kind of a jobber for them, though. He never, and he was our old then, you know. He was obviously, he's in his
Yeah,
80s now, as so he's in his
he
50s.
was around 50 then. Didn't he did he did he did he, they do a wedding with him, or was it with it was with his brother? I think it was with Paul Vachon.
Yeah, I don't ever remember there being a wedding angle with Mad Dog. Now, Butcher was already dead, right? Or is he
Yeah,
still alive and
he
just.
died within the last 5 or 6 years, I think. It was reasonably recently. And of course Luna's passed away too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah, he's you
He's
know,
also
he
a gold medal. He was a gold medal freestyle wrestler as well, I guess we should mention.
Yeah. I mean, he's I don't know a lot about his career other than just, you know, the obits I've read, and I remember Meltzer had a really good piece a few years ago on him, on his career. So there's good stuff out there. Unfortunately, I am not the person to tout Mad Dog Vachon, other than I know a lot of smart people who think he was really, really awesome and important and influential. So
Yeah, I'm sorry. He won the gold medal at the British Empire Games,
ah.
not the Olympics. He was an Olympic wrestler though, and did held his own pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he I remember him mostly because he so Crusher Lazowski is you may or may not be aware of the wrestler that made Milwaukee famous.
Oh, I'm quite aware, yes.
And when Crusher and Crippler were AWA tag champions for like a million years. They had a big feud with the Vachon brothers, and so that's really like my frame of reference because when my dad and my uncle were younger, that was, you know, so the Crusher would always threaten to take those two turkey necks and stuff them in a garbage can and roll them down Mitchell Street. So that's sort of my frame of reference for the Vachons, and I've gone back and watched a lot of that stuff since then. And yeah, he was a great heel. They both were. And he also he was, you know, he was down for to do business for a long time because he got in a car accident in 87, I want to say, and lost his leg. They had to amputate his leg from the knee down. And anytime he showed up at a WWE event, someone would use his leg as a foreign object.
Yeah, the most famous, of course, being the In Your House, where
Yeah,
the
good friends, better
Better
enemies.
Enemies, yeah, where Diesel did it against Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, and he also did it
Over the Edge
Over the
98.
Edge 98, yeah.
Yeah. Which is a great show. That part of it, maybe not the best part of it, but that's that has the Austin Mankind
Dude Love.
Dude Love match, yeah, where Vince is the referee and Patterson's the timekeeper
Yeah,
and
and Briscoe's the
the ring
something
an
else, the
or
ring
I think
announcer.
Patterson's the ring announcer and Briscoe's the timekeeper.
Right.
But so yeah, that's a good, I guess that was Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yes, it was. It was in Milwaukee. So.
So the talk is on the streets, as Hulk Hogan says. That's really the only notable thing that he says in the pre-match promo
I did not see the
to
pre-match
this.
promo.
Okay, it's very, very brief, and the talk is on the streets. And then it's the usual thing. And Tenryu, he of course Japanese, which I do not speak, so I have no other insight into that. So one thing that is interesting about this match is, of course, the fact that Hulk Hogan and the Road Warriors are the great icons of 80s and 90s and more professional wrestling. It is their only interaction. You mentioned there's also the other match with Hawk and Sasaki, but yeah, this is the only one. You know, and they really only crossed paths in 1991, 1990, 91, WWF, and then 96-ish WCW. So there wasn't like a whole lot of opportunity for them to do anything together or against each other. But it is a little bit like, if you think about it, there's certainly some opportunity. You would think, you know, like Hogan, like, need some help with the Dungeon of Doom, and he calls in the Road Warriors, or you know, or some. There was certainly like storyline opportunities where they could have thrown them together, just for like a short-term thing, or just for like a Clash of Champions main event, or whatever, just for the novelty of it, and just to kind of, you know, make it a thing. But for whatever reason, that just, you know, never happened. The Road Warriors were more connected with the Ultimate Warrior, you know, in their, and their big feud against Demolition in 1990, and Hogan was, I guess Hogan was, I don't know what Hogan was doing around then. Actually, I'm trying to think of what Hogan was doing in the fall. Oh, I guess that was Earthquake. I think he was probably
Yeah,
finishing up with
he was
Earthquake,
cheating with Earthquake.
and then he'd win the title in against Slaughter in WrestleMania 7.
So for the record, just to correct us, Paul the Butcher Vachon is actually still alive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
But he's
well.
like got diabetes and he had throat cancer and he had colon cancer and he, but apparently he's still alive and around and he wrote a book and he.
Well, good for Paul Vachon. I am sorry to have killed Paul Vachon on
Yeah,
accident.
before his time. Yeah, that's apologize for that.
I almost tried to kill Brian Wrath, Atom Bomb Clark today.
Oh
So,
no, just the other, Bryan Adams,
Brian Adams. Yeah,
not
I
the
knew Brian
singer Bryan
Adams did.
Adams, who I
No.
sort of wish was dead.
Oh, wow.
That's mean. I just wish
That's
that
a
no one
little
would
mean.
ever play his records ever again.
I do enjoy a little Run to You, I'm not gonna lie.
I'll choose to overlook that. Because I
Okay.
like you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I like you as well. So I'm glad we can still be friends.
yeah, but Bryan Adams, aka Kona Crush Bra, he's dead. But
Yeah.
Brian Clark
He is dead.
is still with us.
Well, the reason there is a 2003 match with Goldberg and the Great Muta against Chronic, which is basically Chronic's last match or very close to it before they retired from wrestling. Which I didn't actually watch the match, although I have a perverse interest in watching it, just, you know, for whatever. But that was an interesting like little like, you know, 12 years later kind of similar type match of, you know, of like Goldberg, you know, kind of being the Hogan, and you know, Muta and Tenryu, and then obviously comparing Chronic to the Road Warriors is a bit of a stretch, but if you think they were
Yeah.
kind of similar characters, and for a very brief time they had that kind of that big aura and were kind of like that style of team. So anyway,
Yeah, I think, I mean, I guess Chronic was sort of aspiring to that, but.
yeah, I mean they never reached that or even came close to that. I'm just saying it's a tenuous comparison, but I think you can see the parallels between them if you're squinting anyway.
Right.
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 So, Earl Hebner's a referee.
Which is weird. I mean, it's not weird, I guess, but it's weird. It's a
I
Japanese
yeah,
match.
that, yeah. Mel Phillips is our ring announcer. And so we have separate entrances for Hogan and Tenryu. And it, you know, it's basically This is kind of what you would expect from the teams that are involved. Animal overpowers Tenryu to start. Then Tenryu sort of smacks himself to kind of get himself in gear. Hogan tags his way in, overpowers Animal for a bit. Then the Road Warriors do a brief double team, and they end up press
Double press
slamming.
slam.
Yeah, double press slam on Hogan and Tenryu. Although the one from Animal on Hogan does not go quite as well as the other.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm sorry, did you already mention that Hogan kicked a cameraman
I
at the
did not.
beginning of the match?
I missed that.
Yeah, like you don't see it, you just see the camera, like you see his foot go into the camera and it falls over, and I don't.
Is it an accident
It
or
looks
is?
intentional.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's interesting how Hogan played this because I know it's Japan, but he's kind of being dickish through most of it. I mean, I get that he's not, playing up the total babyface Hogan, but still a WWF show. Like, I don't think there was a video cassette which I think included matches from this, released roughly during this time, but I don't think it included this one. I forgot to check that. And I'm having trouble spelling Coliseum for some reason, too. To check that WrestleFest 92, or I'm maybe just thinking of another DVD that's called WrestleFest 92 now that I think about it. But
Yeah, there is definitely a WrestleFest. Well, there's a WrestleFest
oh, it would be
91.
91 because this happened in 91, not 92.
Let's see
Although those
here.
took a while sometimes to
Yeah. No, this WrestleFest 91 does caution, this video contains 2 hours of explosive WWF action. Hold on to your seats.
No, it does not have anything from there. It does have a Heart Foundation Legion of Doom match.
It does. It's a tag team mega match, apparently. And Kerry Von Erich is on the spine. And hey, it's got grooming tips from Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Wait, which is good.
And also, this is the only VHS tape to ever feature Greg Valentine on the cover, I'm pretty sure. So, that's noteworthy.
There you go.
There was a WrestleFest, there's a VHS of it that happened in Milwaukee at County Stadium, which no longer exists, of course.
Oh
But.
yeah, the 88 one with the Hogan
Hogan and Andre and the
Andre
Steel
Cage
Cage.
match. Yeah, and that's like the I think that might be the best Savage DiBiase match.
Oh, that's saying a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean they didn't really have a lot of high profile singles matches though,
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Like the WrestleMania one's is short and I mean it's fine, but it's kind of overwhelmed by the other stuff. They don't really get into it that much and. I mean, I'm sure there's like probably like Madison Square Garden footage or whatever from the time. I'm sure they did like the circuit, but they it's not like they it's not like today where you had great matches every week pretty much on TV or or whatever. So
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, we after that Hogan ends up getting back in, getting some control, clotheslining them both, then Tenryu's enziguris to them both.
Really weak, kind of shitty looking enziguris
Yeah,
that they
not
basically no sell.
right. Yeah, because they pop right back in, and we sort of get a stare down between the parties.
So did you how did you watch this match?
I watched it on Daily Motion.
Okay. So I watched it on the Road Warriors DVD
Okay.
with commentary from Animal and Jim Ross.
Ah, okay. Yeah, mine had the Japanese commentary.
Yeah, so well, I could have watched it with Japanese commentary, but my Japanese is pretty rusty since I haven't taken it since, it's been like 8 years since I really used my Japanese at
Okay.
all. So I
Yeah.
thought it would be more beneficial to watch the, with the alternate commentary with JR and Animal. And all I can say is that I really wish that Animal gave more insight into anything
Yeah.
because he just kind of doesn't really. Like
Yeah.
he says how great it felt to do the double press slam bit, and there's not a lot of insight though. It's like, man, it felt great. I had goosebumps. And I'm like, okay, dude, good job. Like,
Yeah. Have you
I
read his book?
have not read his book.
I heard good things, I feel like. I'm trying to remember now where I heard good things, but
I think I'm actually way behind on my wrestling book reading. Like, I think the last wrestling book I read was Boy, like Heenan something. No, I'm sorry. The Hardcore Diaries by Mick Foley, I believe,
Okay.
the last wrestling book that I read, or Bischoff's book. Those came out around the same time, I feel like.
Yeah.
It was one of those.
Bischoff's book any good?
Bischoff's book is good, but you have to. Here's my problem with Bischoff. Okay, so it has a lot of insight into things that were happening, but I always take everything he says with a grain of salt because the biggest problem is the most oft-repeated phrase in Bischoff's book is, well, paraphrase, I should say, because he doesn't say it exactly, but essentially, it wasn't my fault. Like, it's the Gene Snitsky book. Because he takes credit for all the great ideas, and if something turned out shitty, he just is like, oh, well, it wasn't my fault because this person was really pushing for that, or I didn't really think it would turn out this way. I wanted it to be like this, but this guy screwed up, or this guy, you know what I mean? Like he passes the buck on everything that wasn't awesome and didn't make money and was a flop. And if it was awesome and it did make money, then it was totally all 100% him.
Yeah.
So that gets kind of tedious, but the actual, like, if you can separate that and just kind of be able to look at it and understand that, like, he's telling stories about other people and that a lot of that stuff you kind of assume to be at least partially true,
Sure.
then it's interesting, but you have to be able to separate
Yeah.
those
Well,
things.
there aren't a lot of good accounts from WCW from those years. I mean, there's the Death of the WCW book, but as far as just one from, from somebody who was there the whole time, there aren't that many that do that really. So.
So I haven't read Jericho's book either, but I hear that that does a pretty good job of that.
I read the first one. I mean, it talks about his stuff, but I mean, it's probably like 50 pages, if that, of like WCW stuff, I mean, it goes through like a lot more of like the rest of his career. I mean, it's interesting and it's insightful, but it's not like I feel like, a more comprehensive look at those years is useful.
So I've heard that, and it's not a very large portion of the book for what I imagine are obvious reasons, but apparently Bob Mould's book does deal with that a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, his book is mostly about, like, I was in Husker Du.
Sure. That would make sense.
But there is like a chapter or two, I guess, dedicated to that. I've heard from someone who read it and said that it was pretty interesting. But there's not a lot of that in there, so.
Sure. And he was there really for the the bad stuff.
Oh yeah.
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 So Hawk hits a nice drop kick on Tenryu.
Very nice drop kick.
I'm not used to Hawk hitting nice drop kicks, so that
No,
was
and Jim Ross even brings that up.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's a little spry for the big guy. Animal then presses Hawk onto Tenryu, which gets two. Hawk and Hogan brawl on the outside, which just sort of delays Hebner's count after Animal hits a slam on Tenryu. And they continue fighting outside, though we can't really see all that much of it. Animal nails Tenryu with a chair. We see Hogan bleeding a little bit. I think he's kind of gets thrown into the barricades a bit, and there's a little mayhem, but we can't really get we don't get the best look at it, unfortunately. Finally, it settles down to Animal locking a chin lock on Tenryu, and this definitely slows this down for sure. They take a while on that. Hawk then gets a big shoulder block on Tenryu. We see that Hawk is also bleeding a little bit from the antics from before. Then Hawk and Tenryu trade some big blows. Hogan trades in and nails Hawk with the lariat. I'm trying to remember the name of his clothesline. There's like a name for it in Japan.
Of Hogan or of
Axe Bomber, that's what it is.
oh yes, the Axe Bomber clothesline.
Yes, the Axe Bomber clothesline, which he did well. I mean, he did that. He does that in US too. But usually he does tend to hit it a bit snugger in Japan, it does seem like. Or maybe it's all in how it's taken. I don't know.
Probably a little from column A and a little from column B.
Probably, yeah. And then he hits a sloppy backbreaker for two. Hogan does. Hawk fights out of the chin lock, but Hogan resorts to raking the back to
Oh, yeah.
yeah. Animal comes in and then hits sort of a gentle shoulder block on Hogan. He hit a harder one earlier on a Tenryu, but the one on Hogan was definitely gentler. We get a chin lock, and then we get what I believe are actually Hogan chants. I wasn't 100% sure about it, but it did sound a bit like they were actually Hogan chants.
Really, really hard for me to tell, I'll be
Yeah.
honest.
Yeah. We'll just go ahead and say they're Hogan chants.
Sure. Well, yeah, we'll go with that.
All right.
Well, now Wikipedia people, you can cite what we said as
Yes, in the Wikipedia entry on this match.
on this match, you can say that there were Hogan chants and cite us, so there's no citation needed.
Right, yeah. We are certified experts in the field.
That's right. That's right, we are. Also, I guess I'd like to point out at this time, because the point at which it happened, I kind of missed as you were kind of, but when they're brawling on the outside, it is very clear that Hawk does not give a fuck that Hulk Hogan is Hulk Hogan. You know what I mean? Like, there is no even pretense of taking it easy on Hogan or being gentle with Hogan, or in fact, it looks like he's beating him up worse than he would somebody else,
Yeah.
maybe because it's Hogan. Like, there's a bit with a chair, or like not a chair, I'm sorry, the guardrail, when they're outside, and Hawk just doesn't give a fuck, that it's Hogan.
He tosses him in pretty hard, or is it a slam? I can't
He
exactly
has the
remember the.
guardrail in his hands, and
He drops it
Hogan,
on him. Okay, yeah.
yay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I noticed a bit of that. I didn't think it was quite that strong, but he definitely. Like, I didn't feel like he was taking it easy on Hogan, where I felt like Animal did a little bit, you know. And that kind of fits in, their personalities from what I've read and, seen it from their DVD that, Hawk was a little bit of a little temperamental and a little bit, he didn't care so much, where Animal was more the, peacemaker and what have you.
Yeah.
So, which might be the reason why Hogan didn't work with the Road Warriors so much.
Maybe.
Yeah. So anyway, Hogan eventually gets out of the chin lock. He ducks two clotheslines off the ropes, but a double clothesline knocks them both down, which that one was pretty hard. Knocking both Hogan and Animal down. Hawk comes in, then he power slams Hogan. Then Road Warriors hit a double elbow on Hogan for two. Then Hogan busts out the aforementioned drop toehold on Animal, tagging Tenryu in. There's a huge clothesline on Animal for two, but the cover does not the cover does not work. Hawk then
Yeah,
slams Ten.
that whole bit with the arm, like the drop toehold comes after like an arm wringer, and then he cinches it in, and it's like a weird arm bar. That's a really weird spot for that. They've already brawled on the outside, then beating the hell out of each other. Hawk and Hogan are both bleeding, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's do a wrestling hold.
Yeah, that was a bit. It was sort of like, I mean, I guess I was expecting that to kind of build to a hot tag, and that was just sort of like
Yeah.
a nonchalant, like, oh, he kind of got him over there, and okay, he's gonna tag,
Right.
And then they kind of got the heat on Tenryu. So I guess, they were building to it later on Hogan, because he kind of makes his comeback later. But still, it was a little bit. I wouldn't like bad, but it was just a little bit like, oh, okay, we just kind of went here, All this was not really for particularly for anything. So Hawk slams Tenryu hard on the outside. Hogan nails Hawk repeatedly with the chair outside. So Hogan's not really Hogan's not caring so much either. He's
Yeah,
definitely
no.
giving it to
Well, at
Hawk
this point,
pretty well. Yeah.
yeah.
And Tenryu is tossed into the tables outside. He staggers a bit on the outside while the Road Warriors work to keep him out. Eventually tossed back in. Animal with a really nice standing belly to belly for two. Tenryu then ducks a punch, lands a backdrop suplex, but can't reach the tag. Hawk then runs and gets a cheap shot on Hogan to prevent the tag from being made. And a little bit later, Tenryu catches Hawk with a power bomb, but Anemo clotheslines him down hard again when he tries for the pin. Then Hogan boots Animal, hits the body slam and the leg drop. Hawk breaks it up, tosses Hogan out. Doomsday device on Tenryu, but Hogan then slams Animal with the chair to break up the pin. All
Yeah,
four end up.
they basically no sell the leg drop. Animal basically no sells the leg drop, you know.
Oh, really? I mean, I didn't.
I mean, okay, so Hawk breaks up the pin, but really, rather than laying there and continuing to sell, which I guess it's not his finisher in Japan, so it's just weird for me. But he gets up pretty, and he's, I mean, he puts Tenryu on his shoulders about 15 seconds after taking the leg
Yeah,
drop.
that's true. It was fairly quick. I mean, yeah, he didn't pop out of it, but it definitely wasn't that long after he was saved where they are doing their finisher right away, you know. But yeah, you're right. So Hogan then slams Animal with a chair to break up the pin. All four of them end up on the outside. Hawk nails Hogan with the chair, and Hogan and Tenryu are counted out. And you get a nice visual with Hawk and Animal in the ring. And Hawk, he has a bloody face, and his makeup is smeared. It kind of gives a nice picture of the ferocity that has been going on.
Absolutely.
And then, if Gorilla Monsoon were calling this match, he would say that Tenryu had Pearl Harbored Animal,
Yes.
and
Making it
Hogan
the
also.
most politically correct reference he could possibly make.
Exactly. And Hogan and Tenryu then double clothesline Hawk. Hogan tosses Hawk out. Animal then brings in a chair, beats up a few refs, and hits a few of the attendants, ring boys, with chairs. Hogan also grabs a chair, but eventually enough people get in between them that everyone decides to call it off. LOD bails out of the ring. Hogan's music plays, and that's pretty much about it.
I'm still confused about what happened at the end of that match. Like, how did the match actually end? Because even after you just described it, I'm still confused.
I guess my understanding is the result is that Hogan and Tenryu were counted out.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
It
But
wasn't
it's
really
so.
it was unclear the way it was done. It was not done, you know, in the smoothest of ways.
Yeah. I would say not. And it's just the whole ending is really weird. And listening to the animal commentary, they're trying to like the thing that I didn't like about this commentary is that sometimes the WWE like special DVD bonus commentaries are not kayfabed, and sometimes they are, and sometimes they're in this weird middle place. And that's basically where this one is, where Animal doesn't really want to talk about the anything planning the match, and he just kind of like, so they don't really address like why are you guys all staring at each other like dumbasses, and like why does this look so awkward, and what happened at the end of this match. They don't go into any of that because he's kind of kayfabing it, sort of, but not really.
Sure. And he may not, I mean, granted, this is
But
like
he also may not
one of
remember.
thousands of matches in his career. He may not remember, you know, what was going on. But
Right.
although I don't know, I guess he would probably think like a match against Hogan might stand out in his career, you know.
Yeah, right. Right. Also, it merits mentioning that this the ring was on a riser, was on like a stage, which looks weird when you see them kind of brawl towards the crowd or into the crowd. Now, that riser, it was also a show at the Tokyo Dome where Rick Rude, his career, am I right about that? It was in Tokyo, or it was in a similar ring. It was in Japan, and it was a similar setup.
Yeah, I'm not sure if
Where
that one was in Tokyo. I mean, it may have been. It did happen. It was a similar situation. It was a similar thing. I'm not sure if it was there or I can't remember which match it was. It was against Sting.
yeah, it was against Sting. Sting hit him with a suicide dive, and he hit his back on the riser,
Right,
around the corner
exactly.
of the,
Yeah.
yeah, and that was it. It was over for him.
Yeah.
So so once upon a time, you edited a magazine that I wrote for. And I wrote in that magazine about going to a show in Tokyo at Korakuen Hall, which was a 01 show in 2004. Korakuen Hall is located in the Tokyo Dome complex, so I've been adjacent to the Tokyo Dome and I have seen it from the outside and I've walked around it, and you really don't get a sense for how huge it is. Like, I mean, it's just weird because, I mean, it's like, I guess there are American football stadiums that are as big, but there's something about the Tokyo Dome that, especially if you are a wrestling fan, for me at least, I mean, they play baseball there and they do other things there, but I always think of it in wrestling terms. It's just weird to see the Tokyo Dome and all the things that went down there. It's like Madison Square Garden and the LA Sports Coliseum and, the Rosemont Horizon and the Calgary Saddle Dome and the Tokyo Dome and and all those, like, those are all sort of legendary wrestling venues and
Sure, Mid-South Coliseum, obviously.
Arena de Mexico. Right, yeah,
Yeah.
Mid-South Coliseum, Dallas Sportatorium.
Sure.
So it's just weird to have actually been there and seen it. I'm just sad I didn't get to see an actual wrestling show in it, but they don't nowadays, as I understand it, they really don't do them very frequently there. But definitely, after the 90s, it was less and less. Especially since now, like, all the promotions in Japan have kind of splintered into, there's a bunch of smaller promotions instead of two really big ones.
Right.
So.
Yeah. The Roots injury happened in Fukuoka.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, like, I think this is more of like, it's not a bad match, but it's not a great one. It's a solid one with some interesting things and some sort of perplexing things. I think it's more of a watch because of the uniqueness of Hogan and the Road Warriors more than anything else,
Right. Yeah.
which is fine. Not every match, needs to be a classic. I feel like it did its job for the most part. It was cool to see.
Absolutely. It's just it's a cool novelty. The Road Warriors, it's nice to see the Road Warriors really, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say they're at the top of their game in this match, but the stuff we're watching on What a Maneuver now, which this, well, okay, since we started doing What a Maneuver, they did their brief comeback in WCW, which ends super abruptly because they weren't under contract and they basically had a falling out with Bischoff, surprise, surprise, and they just disappear. Like, 1 week they're there and the next week they're gone and nobody mentions it. And then all of a sudden they show up on Raw like 8 months later or something like that. And they're like, it's not the worst stuff, but they're obviously past their prime. And you like it's just okay. Like, everything they do is just okay. So to see
Yeah.
them a little more at the top of their game and, Hawk throwing a drop kick and they're really kind of on the spot with every that Animal's press slam on Hogan kind of being the exception. But
Sure.
really everything else, like, Animal catches Hawk and throws him at Tenryu, and they do so both of them have some really crisp power slams on, guys who are Tenryu is a sumo wrestler. Hogan is obviously, he's Hulk Hogan, he's over 300 pounds. Like, they're really, looking good here, from an execution standpoint for the most part. And that's really nice to see. And well, the same with Hogan, really, because it's stuff where, again, we're watching for What a Maneuver. Hogan is extremely lazy by 1997 for the most part. He turns it on for certain pay-per-view matches and stuff. I mean, but he's lazy to the point of he's not even on TV a lot of the time, which is both a blessing and a curse. But so to be able to kind of go back and, I mean, and I could watch this stuff, I guess, whenever I want. Like, I own this DVD, I own a bunch of shit with Hogan in it, but it's just, I don't often have time to watch that or a reason to watch that stuff
Sure.
when I have to watch, 3.5 hours worth of 97 stuff every week for for my own show. So,
And it's only going to get longer.
and it's only going to get longer because eventually WCW will decide that it's a really good idea to have a 3-hour weekly wrestling show.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, spoilers, it's not, and it's still not. I haven't watched Raw since I moved out here. I haven't watched a single episode of Raw since I moved, because I don't have a DVR anymore, and I don't have Hulu Plus, which basically means unless my ass is parked in front of my TV from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., I'm not gonna watch Raw. And that isn't a super frequent occurrence for me. It's actually a non-occurrence for me since I've been out here. So, but I mean, even the 3 hour Raws that I did watch, and there's some good stuff there, but it's just like 3 hours is too, it's too long for a weekly show, in my opinion. So yeah, it's only gonna get worse for Eric and I going forward. And then like once they move away from the old in your house format of those being 2 hour pay-per-views,
Which is September, I think.
yeah, to just being the same length as every other pay-per-view, then also that's going to be. And they always do pay-per-views 2 weeks in a row. Like every time. Sometimes it switches who does theirs first for the month, but it's like if one of them has a pay-per-view, it is a near certainty that the following week, the other promotion will have a pay-per-view. So it's just hard to find the time. So I'm glad I had the time to sit back and watch it and go, oh yeah, Hogan like can be good, and oh yeah, the Road Warriors really were like good and crisp and like good at their jobs. I mean, the match is kind of sloppy. The finish is a total clusterfuck. But you know, it's decent. And again, it's kind of a cool curiosity that this exists.
And I think that, for me, like, because my first real experience seeing the Road Warriors regularly was like when they came to WWF in 1990. And,
Yeah, me too.
I even kind of thought of them as a little bit like less ferocious than I expected. Like I feel like, they just have like a raw energy in their 85, 86, 87 stuff that just doesn't seem to exist as much in 90, 91, 92, and of course, as you mentioned, falls off a lot more in 97, 96, 97. Although this I agree is a bit of an exception, but I do feel like it's interesting. It'd be interesting to like if the Road Warriors had retired in say when they broke up in 92, if they had never gotten back together, how that would have like impacted what people like think of them. Like did they is it like kind of situation where they held on too long? I mean, I guess they're pretty much held in pretty high esteem for the most part. I mean, there's a lot of people who really love the Road Warriors out there, as I have debated them as a as a demolition enthusiast. I have had my fair share of fun mock debates with people about who is better, but
I think it's still sad that they never had a match against real Demolition.
well, they did. They, I mean, they had.
If Crush was involved, it was not real Demolition.
Well, okay, Axe and Smash were there. Crush was also there, unfortunately. Yes, you're right. There, I don't believe there's actually a two on two proper match, which is unfortunate,
I will say about the Road Warriors, prior to my first exposure to seeing them wrestle was when they came to WWF in 90, but I did definitely rent the WCW Nintendo game because they were on the cover of it and they looked awesome before I ever saw them wrestle.
Yeah, I mean, I saw them in magazines, and I think there were like, I think there was like an AWA video I could rent from my local video store that they had a match in, and so like, I knew about them, and I kind of had the idea, but like, once I saw them, I don't know, I remember having the memory of these guys aren't really as good as I was expecting them to be, or they're not, and my main part of it was that it took them forever to give them the tag titles, like it was like almost a year after they were there that they won the tag titles, and that just seemed like. Why haven't they won this sooner? That kind of thing that might have had a part of it. I don't know, but I've never been. I mean, I think the Road Warriors obviously like they were really cool characters and they were influential and and I get their appeal and their aura, but and I'm also like not always as big. Like I think like a lot of their appeal is like they had like those like big jobber squashes where they would just like totally like be reckless and beat these weak guys up and do these like really imposing, powerful, cool moves. And I like that like a little bit, but a little bit of that goes a long way with me.
Yeah,
So.
I agree. And that is part of, I think, what's, I mean, again, that they are past their prime and that they are kind of one trick ponies is
A
what's
little
starting to
bit. Not,
wear on me.
right, exactly. I mean, they did have some fun stuff with like Midnight Express and some of the great teams, like in the 80s, and even in WWF, they had a handful of good things. But yeah, for the most part, it was kind of like they had their formula, and the same thing with Hogan. Hogan had his formula, and you see it enough, and you get a little bit wary of it. So. All right. Well, we have some Twitter questions.
I love Twitter questions.
They're fun. They're fun. This is an interesting one from, and I'm not sure, from Eric Darcy at I Am Darcy. What would Hogan's career have been if WWF and WCW booked him as a top tag team challenger instead of where he went? Well. Let's answer it this way. Who would Hogan's ideal partner have been?
Probably one of the partners he had, Savage or Warrior. But the problem with that is that you, I mean, Savage, but the problem with that is, especially after a certain point, for the most part, tag team wrestling started to be looked at as a stepping stone towards singles wrestling.
Sure.
And so even if they had started booking him as that, there's eventually going to be a point where that's not they're going to push him as a singles competitor because he's
Sure.
Hulk Hogan. I mean, there's no, unless you change fundamental things about him and you make him not Hulk Hogan, essentially, that scenario just never plays out. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Like,
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I guess if we pretend that tag team wrestling is like the number one thing and singles wrestling is number two for whatever reason,
well, then he would just have always been one of the tag team champions with, probably, well, probably Beefcake, really, because that's essentially what happened. I mean, for a good portion of 96 before the NWO thing, he basically is tagging with Beefcake all the time.
Sure.
And then Savage for a while.
Yeah. And Hall and Nash, of course. Yeah, that's a little different, but yeah, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he, but in like 2-on-2 tag, I mean, because the stuff with Hall and Nash is a lot of like through, 6-man tags and stuff like that, so.
Sure. Yeah, that would work great with the Von Erichs and and the Freebirds and
So, I mean, I just, unless you fundamentally change something about either the way professional wrestling works or about Hogan himself, you, it's just a really kind of impossible question to answer.
I agree. Unemployed historian at TL Hobo. Which is Hogan's better finisher, the Axe Bomber or the Leg Drop?
Oh, it's up. If you want to go first, you can go first. Or if you want me to go first, I'll go first.
Honestly, I like the Leg Drop. I know people are kind of like, think the leg drop looks weak or whatever, or not like a realistic looking finisher. And I kind of agree with that, but I just feel like the visual of the leg drop and like maybe I'm just so used to it as being Hogan's thing. Maybe just it's I can't separate it from my like early like wrestling formative thinking. But I just feel like the leg drop feels so natural and it feels so like it just feel like just the way it's presented visually and just coming off the ropes and it is kind of everything about it, just that whole thing, it just I like it. I enjoy the atomic leg drop.
I'm completely with you. And I it's not even that I have a necessary attachment to the leg drop. It's that I completely hate clotheslines as finishers.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Even like JBL clothesline from now?
Especially JBL's clothesline.
Oh, really?
Hate it. It's up there with, Hands of Stone, Ronnie Garvin's, it's like punching. It's like, the only kind of move like that that I really buy as a finisher is a super kick. But even the Giants WMD, or sorry, Big Show's WMD, or Hands of Stone Ronnie Garvin, or John Studd, or Crush when he was in the Nation was using a heart punch as well. Like all I don't like it.
Now, is that the whole thing of like why don't you just do it like at the beginning of the match if it's or like I know you've complained about Ronnie, the whole Ronnie Garvin thing is like he's punching during the whole match,
Right.
so
So what's different about those punches than his like Hands of Stone punch?
I feel like at least the clothesline from hell, like it's not
The
like he
clothesline from
has
hell, yeah, I said especially JBL because I kind of don't like JBL, but really, I mean, if I'm being honest, that's probably one of the least bad ones. I
Okay.
still don't like it though.
Because I feel like, he winds up and, he's coming off the ropes. And that one, you don't have the opportunity to do that just, every single time. You have to, put extra emphasis in that clothesline. And you have to, have it, be in, a particular point, to do it. It's not like you can just, I mean, it's different from a regular clothesline, I guess. But, I mean, I get the reason why you hate them. I don't really personally have a problem with it just because I think they're visually interesting enough and I even though I agree with the lack of logic, it's just kind of one of those wrestling things I accept. But but I get it. You're certainly I certainly see your point. Next question is from at Masked Tweeter. Should WrestleMania 7 have been held in Tokyo, Japan instead of Los Angeles?
So I'm guessing that the impetus for this question is that Starcade, no, not Starcade, some WCW pay-per-view, right around this same time was held in Japan.
Well, I'm assuming that he's because it happened 6 days after
And it happened
WrestleMania.
6 days after WrestleMania.
Well, WCW did do, I mean, they, and I don't know exact, well. Now I think about it, I think it would have been sometime in March 91 because that would have been the WCW Super Show. That's when Fujinami beat Flair.
Starcade 91 in Tokyo Dome is what they
Right.
called it in Japan, but it was
Yeah.
WCW New Japan Super Show 1.
Right. Yeah, that happened in on March 21st. So that was 9 days before this show. And then it aired in April of 91. And that led into Super Brawl, which was in May of 91. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it would be interesting to have seen a WrestleMania in Tokyo. I mean, that would be unique. I'm not sure that they would have gotten the crowd reaction they desired, especially when you're running a American hero beating an Iraqi sympathizer as your main story.
I would say no. I would say roundly the answer is no.
Yeah,
Because
I'm not sure his question was entirely serious, but I agree that
I'm
yeah.
gonna answer it earnestly though, because if it was serious, then I mean it's interesting because I mean I do like the idea of kind of some of those things, like the SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium and stuff, but your biggest show of the year, when you're on kind of, I mean, at this point, WWF was kind of on a decline. I mean, things would get a lot worse.
Yeah, it was definitely starting.
But this is sort of the beginning of what, like, when you look at, if you use WrestleMania as your benchmark and you look at kind of like how is the product doing, both from a creative standpoint and from a viewership standpoint, as you kind of go along, after WrestleMania 6, I would say. So this is kind of the beginning of the downturn from my perspective. Like,
Yeah.
Like Savage is about to be off TV for a while, and then they'll sort of hastily bring him back, and they start losing guys to WCW, and they kind of start just
Yeah,
booking a lot of guys who
they do
aren't very good.
they bring in Flair, but that doesn't really. I mean, it has its success, but it doesn't quite work
Right,
out.
but Hogan's massive ego gets in the way of what. I mean, the Savage Flair match at WrestleMania 8 is really, really great. But the match that everybody wanted to see Well, and then even that match is, that's like bumped down the card so that Sid can wrestle Hogan in the main event at WrestleMania 8. You know, so like 7, 8, 9, you're on a good downturn. 9, the end of 9 is an insult, you know. And then 10, wrestling, you know, and then once you get into like the middle 90s, wrestling in general, really, I mean, Japan stuff, strangely enough, is kind of the best thing that's happening in the mid 90s in pro wrestling, like in 90, early mid 90s, I guess, like 93, 94, 95. The best stuff that's happening in wrestling, in my estimation, is stuff that's happening in Japan. Generally speaking, I mean, like the Rockers breaking up and stuff like that is really great, but I mean, also a lot of that stuff happened even in, you know, a little earlier than that. So it's, you know, it's a sort of a downturn, and to go somewhere. So first of all, if you do it in Japan, you either can't do it live, or if you do it live, it has to be broadcast at a really weird time, or it has to be performed at a really weird time, because time difference between the U.S. and Japan is like 15 hours.
Sure.
So, you know, that introduces a whole nother, like that, the Mike Tyson James Buster Douglas fight was in Tokyo. And I think that it happened there at a really weird time, so it could be broadcast at a normal time in the United States, which at that point, like, why bother? You know what I mean? Like, so there's that is a problem, and I think your best fan base is gonna be in the US, because I mean, a big part of this show is that it's a co-production. I think if WWF at the time had just gone there and said, "Hey, it's WrestleMania," I don't know that they would be able to fill the Tokyo Dome without Tenryu in the main event and, you know, DiBiase, you know, wrestling. I can't remember what the match was. It was like DiBiase and Haku or Meng versus two Japanese guys, and you know, Savage versus the Cobra, you know,
Right.
and stuff like that. I think you don't get that kind of Japanese crowd at this time. Maybe now, maybe if they did WrestleMania 31 in Japan, maybe, you know, they would, of course, they would never do WrestleMania 30 in Japan, you know,
No.
but you know, maybe they could fill the Tokyo Dome with WrestleMania 31, but WrestleMania 7. No way. That's
Yeah.
bad news bears. You don't want to do that.
Plus, the one good thing about Mania 7 is that crowd is insanely hot.
That crowd is super hot.
Yeah.
And I
Wasn't nearly as
cannot for.
big as the crowd they wanted to have at the LA Coliseum that they couldn't fill, but you know.
But, you know, it's, yeah, it, yeah, it, that would have been a bad idea.
All right. Well, those are our Twitter questions. I think we've exhausted our supply.
All right.
So, Joe, why don't you tell everybody about What a Maneuver and the other shows on the On the Stick Network?
Well, I guess I'll get What a Maneuver out of the way first. I'm hoping that a lot of the people who are listening to this already listen to it, but if you don't, you can listen to What a Maneuver. You can find that and all the other things I'm about to talk about at onthestick.com. We are a weekly wrestling podcast that is delving into the world of professional wrestling in the Monday Night Wars era. We are doing a week by week, blow by blow of that era. So we've already gone through all of 1996, and we're all about halfway through 97 at this point. And we're watching the Monday night shows and the pay-per-views, because really any more than that is too much wrestling.
Yeah, no thunder for you, I assume, huh?
No Thunder. No, when SmackDown and Thunder become a thing, I think we're going to be
Yeah,
skipping those.
that's too much, yeah.
No Superstars. No Saturday Night. No, you know. We did cover the first ECW pay-per-view, just to kind of be able to point out like this was happening too, but we're also not watching, you know, hardcore TV or anything, because also just too much, too much. So yeah, but we're doing a blow by blow of the Monday Night Wars and the pay-per-views that accompany that, which is where all the big beats, the big story beats happen, you know, there anyways. So, So yeah, that's a thing. You can find that usually every Monday at onthestick.com. Last time I checked, though, Eric hadn't posted this week's yet. So I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, so that's a thing that you can find there. And also we do a movie show called The Action Cast, the internet's foremost action movie podcast. And we also do a bi-weekly video game podcast. So if video games are a thing that you are interested in, you should check that out as well. But you can find all of that at On the Stick. You can like us on Facebook if you search for like On the Stick or On the Stick podcasting. You'll find it. You'll find us on Facebook. There's also a link on our website, I guess, if you want to do that. You can follow you can follow me on Twitter at shake underscore well, or you can follow the show at what underscore a underscore maneuver. And we also take Twitter comments and questions before we record so that we can address them on the show. So yeah, that's my spiel.
Cool, Joe. Well, thanks for bringing me back home.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And thanks everyone for listening. And hopefully, people are going to enjoy the show again. It's been a good break. I think it's nice to just have a little bit of time off and recharge batteries and all that. But it's nice to be back too. Hope people enjoy the show. Check us out on iTunes or Stitcher, where you can find a retrospective there. Always appreciate comments and feedbacks at twitter.com/retrospective or /JasonManOhioan. I have two Twitter accounts now, so you can follow me at one or either or both. Thanks everyone for checking us out, and we will return again another time. Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate. Wait. No, I don't want to do that. I was going to hang up on you. I don't want to hang up on you
No,
yet.
no, no.
I want us to stop recording. There we go. All right, I stopped recording. So cool. Oh, do you have anyone for SummerSlam?
I don't believe so. Let me double check my guest list.
Okay.
I know that our next one is Kay Sawyer wants to join us for
Calgary Stampede, or
Calgary Stampede. Yeah.
yeah, makes sense. That's a hell
Yeah.
of a show.
Yeah. Well, plus he's Canadian, so.
Yes, I've heard.
yes. Slamboree was you. I can delete you off there because that already happened. We did that. No, I don't. I
All
can
right.
put you on for.
Yeah, the one, and then the Nitro and Raw after are important, is more even more important than the SummerSlam, although the SummerSlam is important as well. So.
Yeah, SummerSlam 97. You're on the list. I've got, let's see, Scott Holland wants to come back for Royal Rumble 98.
Ah.
TH has been bugging us for the Montreal Screwjob. Eric Darcy wants to come on for the Degeneration X in Your House pay-per-view.
Have you had him on before?
No, we have
Oh,
not
okay.
had him on yet. Brandon Stroud wants to come back for Ground Zero in Your House.
Okay.
And
I've never actually seen that one.
I don't think I have either, actually. And Kay Sawyer wants to be on for Canadian Stampede, which
Cool.
is the next pay-per-view. And yeah, we were trying to get. How did you when you had David Shoemaker on once upon a time, did you email him, or how did you get him on?
I think I might have emailed him, or I might have just DM'd him. I honestly can't remember.
Okay.
But he, but I feel like I've emailed him.
Yeah, we're gonna. I want to bug him.
Yeah, I mean he's always doing a lot of stuff because of the book,
Right.
but yeah, I'm sure he'd do it. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. I'll have this up probably over the weekend.
Cool. Mention me in a tweet and I'll whore it out.
I certainly will.
All right.
All right, man, take care.
Yeah, no problem. Let me know if you if